powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Tom, Jake, and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacy Ross.
A very, very weird morning. Woke up at 5:30, and I had, for some reason, I had ESPN on from the night before. I think I was watching Netflix, but then after a while, it shuts itself off automatically. And so Greenberg's show, Get Up, was on, and they were talking about contenders and pretenders in the NFC. And they had Dominique Foxworth, former DB, played for the Broncos, the Falcons, a couple other teams, and then Ryan Clark, who's been there a while. He's also a former DB from the Steelers. And so they're going through, and they're going through a couple of teams, and I'm like out of it. It's 5 o'clock in the morning, 5:30, whatever it was. I just taken my dogs out, you know. I'm unhooking their harnesses, I'm giving them treats, and I can barely hear the sound on the TV. But I heard them say NFC contenders and pretenders, so it kind of caught my, you know, my peripheral attention.
Yeah.
And then I hear Greenberg say, "Okay, what about the Seahawks?" And my head just sort of slowly turned over. And I'm watching, and I'm watching, and I'm hearing Dominique Foxworth say what he's saying about the Seahawks, and I'm just like, no, don't say that. Don't say that. That could actually be true. Don't say that. Don't say that. Oh, God. And so then I grabbed my remote, paused it. I said, I got to rewind this. I got to record this because we need to play it on today's show. We just have to play it. Now, it is, as the Groz would say, it is just one man's opinion, but it struck me. And my worst fear is that everything he is saying is true. Take a listen.
The Seattle Seahawks, contenders or pretenders?
They're pretenders, man. Like, they are a mediocre team with an outstanding quarterback. They've had four fourth quarter comebacks this season to win. And I know that's something to celebrate, and that's a reason to talk about why Russell Wilson is the MVP candidate. But that tells you that this team is not very good. Their defense is about 26 in the league. Damian Conley's playing well, but everybody else on that defense, not doing well. They are pretenders in a tough NFC. I've looked at that Seattle schedule. They don't have any really impressive wins, and their schedule only gets harder. And the bad teams that they beat, they needed to do it with fourth quarter comebacks. This team is not good.
This team is not good. This team is not good. 7-2. They've won the games they needed to win. They've lost to who? The Saints and the
Ravens.
Okay. Two good teams. You probably should have beat the Saints up here at home when they didn't have their starting quarterback in Drew Brees. That was a game that definitely got away. Probably should have beat the Ravens too, but that's okay.
Yeah, pick six, I think, was a big momentum changer in that game, unfortunately.
Is this team a fraud? I mean, look, he praised Russell Wilson. I think on the offensive side of the ball, we're all in the same boat. Like, we all think that the offense is great, even nationally, if you don't watch every game. It's tough to deny that. But eventually, is this defense going to get picked apart, exposed, or are they going to get better? Because really, they haven't gotten that much better than where they were the last year or so.
It's true.
So is that good enough?
Well, the biggest thing for me is I have felt, unfortunately, over the last couple weeks, as I've watched the Seahawks, as I've watched the 49ers, and just the way that the two teams are built and the way that they're playing, I felt that the time that the Seahawks were going to face the 49ers, that it was going to be this realization moment of, okay, you've been able to get away with it, but the 49ers is going to be the team that's telling you, hey, this is a moment where your defense clearly isn't good enough. You know, your offense, it doesn't have enough firepower. It's not truly an offense that can, you know, help get you to a Super Bowl, and especially just how dominant the 49ers defense is, more so than the Seahawks offense. But as we've gotten into this game, and as I've really started to study the 49ers and really dive in and look at them, I feel more and more confident every day that the Seahawks actually have a great chance to win this game. And I'm not saying that they're going to be a team that's going to win the game by 10 points or more. That's never going to be the Seahawks style. But I do feel more and more confident every single day that the Seahawks are going to win this game. And big part of that is when you take a deep dive into this San Francisco 49er defense, although they are extremely talented and they are very good against the pass because they have elite pass rushers and they have eight guys in their rotation, very reminiscent of 2013 and 2014. that makes me feel jealous and envious. But you look at the run game and the way that they are not a good running run-stopping defense. And since week four, the Niners are allowing 5.54 yards per carry. That ranks 31st in the NFL right now. And for a lot of teams and a lot of these bad teams that the 49ers have been playing, the 49ers have just gotten up early where teams are not able to stick to the running game. And I feel that the Seahawks, this will play right into their hands.
Do you think they'll come out swinging through the pass like they did against the Bucs? Seattle will? Or do you think it'll be, let's try to establish the run early? Is this kind of the opposite approach then as it was last week?
This is where you talk about adaptability. This is where you talk about actually your philosophy fits into your strength of this game, that actually running the football is going to be a very positive thing. This is the weak point of the San Francisco 49ers. And you obviously are going to want to put the ball in Russell Wilson's hands, but in order to set up the pass, you're going to want to establish the run. Unlike last week versus the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, where the pass clearly set up the run. And so that's where you go into each week, being able to adapt, being able to look at the strengths and weaknesses of your opponent and attack those. And that's where I feel like for the Seahawks offense, at least, they have a great opportunity to really expose this 49er defense in a way that has not been done.
The funny part about what Foxworth is saying there is he's talking mainly about the defense and the weaknesses that they have on defense. This game with San Francisco, I don't think is a game where I'm too worried about the Seahawks defense getting exposed. Like, some team may do that eventually.
You're worried about what the offense will look like against San Francisco's defense?
Yes.
That's fair.
That to me is the matchup. It's not about, look, I mean, Jimmy Garoppolo, I think as of right now, is a good quarterback. I watched him against Arizona last Thursday make the throws he needed to make. He kind of reminds me a little bit of like Eli Manning early to mid-career, where he wasn't necessarily a big star yet, but he could make some throws. He could maybe give you a comeback here and there. He reminded me, but he wasn't like the reason why the 49ers won. He just did what he had to do. I don't think he's going to go out there and light it up against this Seahawks defense. I'd be very surprised if that happened. I mean, look at the weapons that they have. I mean, they have Tevin Coleman, Emmanuel Sanders, a couple of, but those aren't like, I would take the Seahawks offense and the pieces they have over what the 49ers have every single day of the week.
I also wonder if the truth about this Seahawks team is not actually a paper tiger with a great quarterback or a much better defense than they're getting credit for, but instead somewhere in the middle. And I think people mistakenly think that if you see an undefeated team, it's because this team is all world, and you need to be the best version of the Seahawks we've ever beat to beat them. And instead, it's like what we've talked about before, where NFL games and the talent level between different NFL teams is usually much slimmer than it is in other leagues or in something like college football, where there's just this all-around dominant team. And mm-hmm. even though the San Francisco 49ers have been dominant against the pass, enough to lead the league in defense despite being 13th or 14th against the run, there are still weaknesses there. And I think I understand where you're coming from, Tom. I'm trying to get to Jake's mindset with it, because right now I'm still kind of nervous about all of it,
and you should be. You absolutely should be. I mean, this defense for the San Francisco 49ers, talent wise, is incredible. But you lose Quan Alexander, one of their star linebackers, and I just rattled off that stat about how poorly they've been against the run, and you're losing one of your best linebackers in this game. That's not going to be easy to replace. This fits into the style of game that the Seahawks have always wanted to play, and really where I think that they're best suited for. So this is an opportunity for the Seahawks to attack the 49ers, and if they can keep this game in range throughout the entire game, I have more faith in Russell Wilson and Bobby Wagner and this crew with how many fourth quarter comebacks that they have had. I don't see it as a weakness. I see it as a strength, that if they can keep this game close and within striking range mm-hmm. into the fourth quarter, they've got an absolute great chance to win this football game. And that's where you take experience over this new up-and-coming team. As great and as formidable as the 49ers do look, I really do think it's about matchups. Like I said, against Baltimore Ravens, you guys knew how nervous I was going into that game because I felt that the Baltimore Ravens, the way that their team plays, just isn't a great matchup for the Seahawks. I don't necessarily feel that way against the San Francisco 49ers, but a big part of that has to do with, can the Seahawks offensive line protect Russell Wilson? That's going to be a big factor in it.
They've done a pretty good job protecting him so far. Like, I mean, Russell Wilson doesn't really require the amount of time that other more stationary quarterbacks maybe do, because Russell is almost better sometimes when he's not protected and he has to extend the play a little bit and his guys get open. I'll just go back to this offensive line. Excuse me, not this offensive line. This offense, Metcalf, Lockett, Russell, Carson, and the offensive line up against the San Francisco defense. That, to me, is the matchup. I agree with some of what Dominique Foxworth said there about this defense. And one other thing they pointed out that I didn't record there, it was that the Seahawks have, in their remaining schedule, the toughest schedule of anybody in terms of
their remaining teams
and their win percentage and et cetera. Look, I'm not too worried about that. Not because it isn't true, and it isn't like a menacing thing to think about. I just don't really want to think about it. One thing I do agree with you, Jake, on is that I think that they can go up against anybody and make it close. And then you just kind of take your chances in the fourth quarter. They're not going to always come out the winner, but I'd be surprised if they got blown out by anybody. Right now, three questions.
It's time for three questions.
Can't wait for it.
Every day at 12 after 12, Tom Wassel's burning questions for Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
Enough with the "we got to protect the kids" nonsense.
I was watching all the college basketball last night. Duke, Kansas, Michigan State, Kentucky. And even with the best teams in college basketball, the quality of the sport is so much less than the NBA. Just in terms of missed jumpers, turnovers, the quality of the sport is obviously just, it's less than. But it doesn't matter to me. College football is not as good as the NFL in terms of the overall quality of the sport. The XFL won't be as good as... But for some reason, none of that stuff matters to me because I just flat out love college basketball. Does the quality of the sport affect your enjoyment of something?
I think it's the competition level between the two teams. I can watch two mediocre football teams battle it out if they're keeping it close and it's exciting. And sometimes chaos makes for good viewing. More if you don't have any genuine rooting interest. No one wants to see their team struggle and look mediocre on the field. But if you're just watching it because you're bored and it's a Wednesday and there's a football game on, it can sometimes entertain you.
Sometimes. South Alabama against Troy.
Yep. I just want a battle.
Yeah, why not?
Yeah, I think when you're talking about college sports versus professional, I love college football, college basketball, because there is more parity. There's just something pure about it in terms of, you know, their schools and the rivalries and, I mean, the genuine rivalries that are there. And also knowing that there is going to be some obvious differences in turnovers and missed shots and all of that, because it's fun watching those teams develop over the years and watching players develop from year one to year four. That's what the great programs do. And when you watch Kansas basketball, I mean, last night, it was miserable seeing the fact that Kansas continues to have turnover problems. That's just the way they play. But usually they're able to overcome it because they've got great talent. So I think it makes more fun and more parity, as long as it's not completely sloppy.
Number two.
All right, this question is for anybody out there who's ever owned a Richard Sherman jersey and still considers themselves a big-time fan of Richard Sherman. You're watching this game on Monday night. How are you going to feel if he picks off Russell Wilson and makes a big show of it?
Because he would. Like, he would absolutely make a show of it.
But how are you going to feel?
I will feel frustrated by it. I'll feel frustrated by it. And it's not just because, you know, you miss Richard Sherman being a Seattle Seahawk. But if he goes out there and gets the pick and makes a big show of it, I don't know, man. It's just the way that he left and the way that he left rubbed me the wrong way a little bit. I understand some of his frustrations, but just went about it the wrong way. And then also just the absolute venom that he has towards Pete and Russell. It just, a lot of it just doesn't make sense to me.
Well, and the reason that a team would love him, fans of a team would love him, is the same reason they wouldn't like him on another team. Like a player like Richard Sherman is going to get so much support and excitement because he talks trash about other teams and opposing quarterbacks and kind of rubs it in your face. And it's the same thing that Seahawks fans loved about him when he was here, because they felt like he had this brashness that he wasn't afraid to say how he felt. I think making matters more awkward this year is that, unlike last year, he's playing pretty well. He's leading the team in pass defense, interceptions. He has a touchdown. He's pretty much their best corner right now, at least on paper.
No doubt. Yeah,
so
he is.
It's going to be a battle.
Yeah, he's playing good football. I mean, yeah. You could see him as you watch him. I mean, last year you could tell that he was coming from his Achilles injury and all that. He's still not the same player at the same level in terms of physically where he was, but he is so smart, and that's what's made him a great corner in this league and one of the best that this league has seen. And you still see all that. I mean, just he pattern matches, he anticipates, he does all that stuff.
It's just a shame that the guy who's responsible for, like, probably the greatest moment in the history of the Seattle Seahawks franchise with the tip is a guy who could go out there this year and just ruin it for you.
Right, and be a villain, right? Like, how polarizing and different is that? But
because that's exactly what he wants to be.
It's true, and until he is done wearing a 49er uniform and he's done playing football, you know, that's the part where he won't be anything else other than a villain until that's over.
Number three.
As a Seahawk fan, and you can say nothing here if you want, but what about the 49ers are you most jealous of?
The pass rush. They've doubled the Seahawks sacks. They have 30 through 8 games, and Seahawks have 15. That's certainly one of them.
Yeah, I would say there's also the side of me that Kyle Shanahan and the way he calls plays, you know, makes me feel that way. But I honestly look at it and I say, you know, Brian Schottenheimer's done a really good job so far. And he's done an excellent work with this offense and the way that they're operating. I mean, you have to appreciate what he's done. So the biggest, I agree with Stacey, their pass rush, the way that they play, I think their defense and how together they are and how much fun that they have, I think that's the part where I'm most jealous and envious of, because when they step on the field, you feel them, you feel their energy after every hit. I mean, their physicality, their fun, the juice that they bring. That's the part
it's
that
the
I'm envious.
It's the defense Seattle used to have, essentially.
It is.
I'll tell you what I'm most jealous of. It's not... how do I put this?
I don't know, Tom.
They have better uniforms than the Seahawks do.
What?
They do.
I don't disagree with you.
See, here's the thing. I don't
like lime green, that's why.
Oh, my gosh.
The 49er uniforms, I don't think are anything great. But they're better than what the Seahawks have. Like, the Seahawk uniforms, I'm sorry. They just look weird.
No. They don't look weird. They're just not my favorite. I mean, they aren't. You guys, they aren't bad.
They are weird. What is that pattern that goes down?
You guys are nuts.
It's like feathers, right?
Yeah, it's a feather like a hawk.
I'm not mad at the jerseys. I will admit that selfishly, I think I look better in other colors.
Well,
you look good in red.
I think the Seahawks honestly have still, even though there's been other uniforms that have come out, new uniforms like the Jets and all that, I think the Seahawks have one of the coolest, most unique uniforms
that
make them stand out, and I love them.
It's definitely
the 80s uniforms,
absolutely
man.
Love
that
these
silver
jerseys.
Helmet.
Yeah.
They're the best.
I agree with Stacey.
That's
look,
what I
San Francisco 49ers just plain. They're just, ugh.
They're better than what you got.
No, they're plain. They're plain.
I don't know about that, man. Like, you're right. They are unique, what the Seahawks have. And I'll even give you the road white with the blue pants. That's pretty sharp looking. But still, there's just way too much going on. I prefer a more classic look.
You're kind of a classy guy. You're more of a Penn State kind of guy, an Alabama type of guy.
Oh, so you want the two-color palette.
Well, there's always a white involved because you're home or road. But, like, yeah.
But you don't want it to – you don't want designs. You're, like, the classic. Like, I want just the Texas uniforms.
Yeah, I don't want 8 different things going on in my uniform.
I feel like most NFL uniforms have that, though.
Well, nowadays they kind of do. Everybody's got 3 alternate uniforms.
It could be worse.
what could it be? Like Jacksonville or something?
Yeah, the Browns.
The Browns. That was a bad change.
Jacksonville. I don't like teal.
Yeah. No, what am I really jealous of with the 49ers? Their success. Their success. I mean, whether it's because they've had a certain schedule or because they have a menacing defense. I mean, look, they do have that edge. The reason why the Seahawks don't have an edge on defense is because their defense isn't all that great. They've allowed so many points just through the first half of the season that they're not going to scare anybody. They can go out there and they can maybe make a few plays and win you a game. Marquise Blair against the Falcons a week ago.
Yeah.
You know, the play that who made the play against Jameis Winston when he with the phantom fumble that he had.
Oh,
Rasheem Green picked it up.
Picking it up. Yeah, I mean, they're good enough to make a play when it's absolutely necessary, but they just don't scare me.
Yeah, well, why would they, right? Like, Why would this defense scare you? There's nothing scary about this defense other than the fact that you have Bobby Wagner, Jadeveon Clowney. Like, those are the two guys that are give you any sort of pause, or Jaron Reed is another one in the run game. I mean, those three guys, I think, are ones that anytime you face them, they're like, yep, we got to put those three guys. We have to make sure we account for those three guys at all times. But after that, right now, there's no reason to be afraid of this defense, and they haven't instilled any sort of fear. They're not getting after the quarterback. They're certainly not, you know, defending the pass very well. So they have to as a defense, and I think that's why you see Bobby Wagner after a win, after a great win like this, that Bobby Wagner was extremely frustrated in the locker room with his defense and the way that they're playing. There's a reason for that.
There is. We're going to ask Groz about that next. Have you guys caught what Groz just tweeted out?
No, what is it?
Well, he is coming out with us. He's jumping on the phone, but I'm not even sure how to describe this. He just tweeted out a picture of himself. He must have just come from the eye doctor because he looks like Cyclops. He's got like a dilated pupil or something. I don't know.
We'll ask him.
If you guys want to head to his Twitter page, you can all check that out. But Groz is going to join us next. We'll ask him about all this stuff and more. Tom, Jake, and Stacey, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Tom, Jake, and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacey Rost.
This hour, Tom, Jake, and Stacey is brought to you by Car Toys. We're going to be speaking with the Groz here in just a second. Okay, he's on the line. Hey, Groz, you just tweeted out something that we cannot stop looking at. What is going on with your right eye right now?
The better to see you with, my dear. it's cataract surgery, so it's a really pretty routine thing. I had it done this morning, and the eye is extremely dilated, and it's helping me scare small children and all kinds of people today.
You scared me, but I can't stop looking at it, Groz. Like, what'd you do? What'd you do to us?
It's just drops, man. Just drops.
Oh, that's incredible.
So what, they put like a clear patch over your eye and you can see through it, no problem?
Exactly.
The clear patch is what makes it scary.
Yeah.
What did you say, Stace?
I said the clear patch is what makes it so scary because it kind of like makes your eye look bigger, like a
fish. I gotta be honest. I'm thinking of sticking with the clear patch.
I think you should.
I think it might be a look that works.
Well, I'll tell you what, Groz. I've been talking about how the Seahawk defense kind of lacks viciousness. It lacks scariness. If we were to line you up on the defensive line and you were to just look at the 49er offensive line, I think that could help. What do you think of this defense so far?
You know, I mean, it's been disappointing, Tom. I'd say, you know, you think about what they lost and then what they gained, and they spent a significant chunk of money in getting two defensive ends to kind of fill in for Frank Clark, who I understand is not going great guns with Kansas City, but to make up for the pressure you lost there, and it's just you're not getting it. I mean, Jadeveon Clowney has had his moments for sure. You can see what kind of a player he is. He's just been, and I don't know if it's because they've been doubling him, tripling him, and not worrying about anyone else, but, you know, he just has not been productive. You know, he's on pace for four sacks. So that's just not what you got him for. And Ziggy Ansah, you know, again, coming back from injury and maybe still not up to speed, is just you know, absolutely hasn't been a factor at all. So I think it all starts from there. It starts with the fact that you've had difficulty getting pressure. That hurts your back line, which is somewhat new, and you're trying to break new guys in. The linebacking core has been solid, but they're kind of being asked to do too much at this point, and I think disappointing is a fair word for what we've seen so far. Now, there's reason to think with Reed back, Ansa getting more healthy, that they can get better, but they certainly didn't look it this past weekend.
Graz, do you think that this group, as much as they have their philosophy on defense, and they have obviously had tremendous success, and all of the reasons that you just pointed out that they're struggling, do you think that this group with Pete Carroll, that they don't make wholesale changes, they don't change their entire philosophy or even their scheme and coverage, but that they find a way, that Pete Carroll and this defensive staff finds a way to make little tweaks, whether it's personnel, whether it's, you know, scheme adjustments, that they can get that done? Or do you think that they're at this point where, hey, it is kind of is what it is, and we're just going to stick to what we do, and hopefully our guys start playing better?
There's a $64,000 question. I mean, you know, Pete Carroll believes in what he does, obviously. He's a defensive coach first and foremost, a secondary coach, you know, above all, and, you know, has his philosophy that has served him well and has not shown, you know, I mean, look, well, I'll say this, though, that they're certainly blitzing more than they used to. So you're seeing some adjustments to it. You know, the whole Seahawks team reminds me of kind of my youth of being a Dallas Cowboys fan. And you know, they called the defense doomsday, but it was also some years it was just bend and don't break. And you know, it was philosophical. They understood that teams were going to pile up yards and move it down the field. And their goal was to hold them to field goals as much as they could and stay close and let Roger Staubach win the games in the fourth quarter. And it seemed to work very well. And you kind of got the same kind of makeup here where you've got a quarterback who can, nine times out of ten, win the game for you in the fourth quarter if you can just get him there in range. So, I think that they may have to adjust what they're doing philosophically. And if I were to say to do anything, it would be to kind of make that adjustment. They can't give up big plays, and they're having trouble getting turnovers. So if they can adopt a bend but don't break sort of philosophy, force field goals and keep it close for Russell Wilson to win, that's going to work for them. And it has worked for them so far.
We've kind of debated before, and you're probably the best person to ask about this, just already having compared them to another team that you remember. Is there a team you can remember that made it pretty deep into the playoffs or to the Super Bowl that just really struggled on that side of the ball?
Well, the Dallas team that I'm talking about did it a couple times, and they had talent on defense, but they struggled. You know, we've seen some teams do it with you know, exceptional over-the-top offenses, and you know, the Seahawks have a really good offense. You know, we'll get a better read in the next 5 weeks if it's exceptional when they go up against some better defenses. But, you know, it's tough to be honest, Stace, it's tough to imagine a deep playoff run, even though we're in an era now that really favors the offense a lot more than it used to, you know, a ton more than it used to. You know, it's still hard to believe that you can actually do it without a good defense. Now, I say that, and then we think about last year, where statistically going into the postseason, neither Kansas City nor the Rams had good defenses. One made it to the championship game and nearly got past it. The other one made it to the Super Bowl. So it can be done for sure, but your offense had better be extremely, extremely good to make kind of deep run that those teams made last year.
What do you think about the way, by the way, we're talking to the Graz here on the Zeke's Pizza Hotline. What do you think about the way that the NFL has handled this whole officiating the PI challenge thing, where coaches are trying to challenge PIs and they're just coming up empty-handed every time?
You know, it's funny. I remember we talked to Clayton about it when it was you and me and Bob, and Clayton talked about what a disaster it was going to be, and you know, we were kind of saying, "Geez, you know, you haven't even seen it yet." And I don't think he thought it would be a disaster of this type. But it kind of is a disaster.
Yeah.
I mean, it's useless. It's pointless. You've got coaches now acknowledging, not just Pete Carroll, but other coaches saying that they're using their challenges just to show the league, to show that the league is not doing anything about it. So it's funny. It's not the way that everyone thought it would be bad, but it really is bad. And look, the one thing the NFL has shown the ability to do in the past when it comes to officiating is to be willing to make changes and philosophical moves during the season. We'll see if they do it. But right now, Tom, I agree with you. It's an absolute joke.
Graz, college basketball is back. What are you most excited about in terms of watching some college basketball this year?
Well, I think, you know, right here at home, man, you know, you've got a really, really interesting team in Montlake. They got one of the best freshmen that they've probably ever had in Isaiah Stewart with a couple of key guys back. They've got tremendous length. I mean, they've really got, for those who are fans of Syracuse basketball, Jim Boeheim over the years, and, of course, the 2-3 zone that Mike Hopkins has brought with him, he has now truly got the types of players, the 6'8", 6'9 guys with big wingspans, to play that defense and to really cause problems. So I think right here, you know, in Seattle with UW in particular, you've got a tremendous college basketball team with real potential to make a deep run this year. So I think that they jump out immediately. I mean, otherwise, look, college basketball year to year, when you have a situation where your top 10 or 15 freshmen usually leave after 1 year, it's really hard to know what teams are going to look like when they reset. So I'm looking forward to the start of the season for sure, but in particular, and I think my old boys at Seattle U are going to have a good season as well, but Washington's got a chance to be something very special this year, so I think that's at the top of my viewing right now.
Graz, what happens if you have an itch on that eye? Can you scratch it somehow?
You know, Tom, I've tried to do it about 4 or 5 times, and ironically, this plastic patch seems to get in the way. I guess it's serving its purpose.
Oh, goodness. All right, well, take care of it. Do whatever the doctor told you to do, and we'll talk to you soon. Thanks for coming on.
Great to talk to you guys. Thanks. Anytime.
I think when I was a kid, my brother got poked in the eye by our neighbor. We were using these sticks to, you know, as like a sword fight type thing. And my brother got poked in the eye. He ended up having to have an eye patch for like a couple of weeks. It's amazing that we don't injure our eyes more than we do.
Like, well, I never did, but probably because my parents got me real toys.
Well, the only issue...
we had to go pick up sticks?
The only issue that I've really had with my eye is just, honestly, I hate it when I get eyelashes in my eye. And you just have to like... Either you try and get it out, or you just have to like cry it out. That's the worst, the absolute worst.
You got the best thing you can hope for is to go to the mirror and sort of, you know, pull down on your eye, on your eyelid and look around for it. If you can't see it, you're in trouble,
big time. You got to wait it out, and that's the worst, worst.
I'm trying to empathize with this struggle, but then I remember, like, imagine you have mascara on there, and then shadow or a liner gets in your eye, and then eyelash glue. You guys don't even know.
Yeah, eyelash glue.
I am very grateful I don't have to worry about that.
You don't even know, Tom.
Goodness. Have you guys ever completely changed your mind on an athlete? Like, I thought this guy was one thing. He turned out to be another. Or I used to hate him, and now I'm rooting for him. There's one guy out there that I need to address because I used to be really hard on him. We're going to do that next. 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Tom, Jake, and Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacy Rost.
I must watch a lot of ESPN because two of the three segments we've done so far have been based off things I've just sort of glanced at my TV screen. I saw that... the Panthers put Cam Newton on IR yesterday because he's got a foot injury. And he had been dealing with a shoulder injury for the past couple of years. Now he's got a foot injury. He's on IR. And in the moment where I saw that, I thought, you know, I kind of feel bad for this guy. After he lost that Super Bowl and he sat there in that press conference and he just wouldn't answer any questions and he ended up storming off.
Yeah, handled it very poorly.
Right. I mean, he did what the 49 other losing quarterbacks before him, you know, wouldn't do, which is sit there and answer questions about it. Or did I say that right? I don't know if I said that right. But he didn't look like a leader. He just looked like a guy who was completely overrated as a player, didn't go after the fumble, whatever. But I thought that because I'm usually wrong about everything, he would come back in 2016 and he would be a great player. And he wasn't. And then he got hurt. And then there were a ton of situations where officials should have been calling roughing the passer against the guys that were coming after him and never did.
Mm-mm.
He deserved
a lot more love from the officials than he ever got, right? And at that point, I kind of felt bad for him. Now, it looks like his career in Carolina could be over. I mean, they could release him at some point after the season. And I look at him and I say, you know what? If Cam Newton had a big comeback year in 2020, if he were able to, you know, get out on the field, be 100% healthy, I think I would root for him. I really do. I never liked the showboaty type of stuff, the Superman needing to make a big spectacle out of every single touchdown, every single play. I thought that was kind of pointless. But you know what? If he came back now, I bet you he'd be a lot more mature. I'd probably root for him.
See, I find showboating not nearly as offensive as I find athletes like committing assault or, you know what I mean, doing things that are actually pretty bad. I get why it annoys people because no one likes seeing someone brag. But I don't know. I feel like that aspect of Cam Newton never got under my skin. But I'm with you in that I do feel bad for him, and I want him to find some success somewhere else. And I also think that he's missed out on a lot of those calls, maybe because he's so just like a big guy that he just, I don't know, they just let it play out and see what happens.
Cam Newton, to me, the reason why he bothered me was not because of the way that he was, you know, in terms of celebration and all that. The game's supposed to be fun, and I think that that was an endearing part of Cam Newton is when things went wrong. When things were going wrong, he was a completely different player and a different person and a different attitude. So it was more of a front runner type of mentality than it was actually genuinely, you know, this is who I am, this is how I lead, this is how I go about it. You know, when things went wrong, Cam Newton isn't the quarterback that I would want leading my football team. That's just how I view it. The other side of it is the NFL is cutthroat. And as great of a player as Cam Newton has been, and especially for the Carolina Panthers, unfortunately for him, injuries have plagued him over the last couple years and has really diminished his play. And the Carolina Panthers have just not been as successful as we are accustomed to seeing them. And you see a backup quarterback, an undrafted guy, and Kyle Allen all of a sudden come out of nowhere and he's helping the team win. And man, what do you start to do as your Carolina moving forward? And yeah, I do feel for him because I think Cam Newton is a special unique talent that the NFL has not seen before in terms of his size, his physicality, his ability to throw the football. But this is just a great example of the NFL that doesn't stand still for anybody, and even great players, you know, they sometimes have to face the reality that teams are going to move on.
Have you guys ever turned on an athlete either way? Now I like somebody, now I don't like somebody.
Like going from liking to disliking?
Yeah, either way.
The one player that comes to mind for me is I hated this player, and now I actually really appreciate this player. And that player is Tom Brady. Like, Tom Brady in that initial run of the Patriots, like, you know, 2000 through 2010, I absolutely hated Tom Brady. I'm not sure why, really. Just maybe it was the success. Maybe it was Spygate and everything that came with the Patriots and all of that. But then now as I'm watching Tom Brady and what he does and have an appreciation for the greatness that he has played with and the longevity that he's done it at, it's just really, truly remarkable. And it's game changing because now you look at quarterbacks completely different in terms of the longevity of their career because of Tom Brady and Drew Brees and guys like that. So Tom Brady, I've come to really appreciate his fiery competitiveness and the way that he plays the game. That's a guy that I've done a 180 on.
There are a couple, I don't know that I've done a total 180, but I think a common theme is athletes that you love that then go into like an ownership or kind of corporate side of things and people slowly fall out of love with them. Like Derek Jeter. Who didn't like Derek Jeter, at least that didn't just hate that he was so successful. And then heading into the business side of things, I think a lot of fans didn't like him.
Because he went into the Marlins and fired him.
Totally, yeah. I mean, that's...
And A-Rod's kind of gone the other way.
Yeah. A-Rod's gone from everyone hating him because he went into broadcasting and everyone's like, well, great.
Well,
he knows a ton and he's funny and he's dating J-Lo.
Yeah, that's a big factor.
My problem is I have to stare two of my guys in the face like almost every day, one of them being Jake Heaps, who I used to be a big hater of.
I was waiting for this moment.
Big time hater.
Whoa.
I was sure Jake Heaps was going to go to UW. It just made me sick. Thank you for not, Jake. And then Brock Huard, who I could not stand as a player. Oh, my God. I hated Brock as much as any football player in the Pac-10.
Why?
He just had this look on his face. Hey, he went to UW. He just always looked like he was like kind of whining, complaining to the refs. I didn't like that. Probably some of it was like imparted on me from my dad, who didn't like Brock either. And just like, you know, you hear what your parents are saying. Yeah, Brock Huard, get him out of here.
Did you not like Damon either?
I don't even remember Damon. Yeah. Brock was like one of the first UW quarterback I ever hated.
Did you ever tell Brock that when you first
Absolutely.
Got here?
Absolutely. My first day as an intern, I was like, you.
You did not.
That's awesome.
That's a lie.
So, well, jokingly.
Okay.
Not serious.
Did that hatred end when the fact that I didn't go to UW, or did that linger with you?
No, I became a big fan of you because you didn't go to UW.
Gotcha.
And thus allowed the 2008 Apple Cup to take place and just everything that could happen and all the failures that could befall UW because you didn't go there. I was so grateful. Thank you, Jake.
Oh my goodness.
You're welcome.
Petty local squabbles.
I love it.
How could you not like Jake? Every UW quarterback, well, I don't know. Maybe Jake Browning, was he a nice guy?
Yeah.
The guy for
Jake Browning seemed professional.
He was a competitor.
He was a competitor.
Remember when we had that guy on from Utah, the play-by-play guy?
Oh, yeah, Bill
guy?
Riley.
He came on. Do we have that bite where he came on and he called him a punk?
Bill Riley did?
Yeah, he, I don't know.
You got to love Bill from
Salt Lake. We'll play that for Jake Washington Browning. Wednesday.
Oh, okay. Good.
As far as football, he said really solid. Well, I met him at Media Days, and he was kind of cocky and arrogant this year at Media Days.
Was he really?
He was kind of like, hey, you know, I'm back here to do this again. I guess I'll talk to you guys. That was kind of what he gave us this year at Media Day down in Southern California.
He was cocky and arrogant, huh?
What about Aaron Rodgers? Did anyone change their mind on Aaron Rodgers?
No, he's still snarky.
I didn't used to think he was snarky.
Mm. He wavers.
Now I do.
He wavers back and forth. I'm not sure. Maybe we can continue this conversation later. Up next, though, other than Russell Wilson, which Seahawk player has been the biggest difference maker this season? We'll talk about that. 710 ESPN Seattle.